Welcome. Thank you to Moses/Marble Seed for having me here. I'm still not used to that new name, so we'll say both. I'm Dana. We're going to talk about pastured hogs. This clicker. Okay, so quick poll, who is in the room? Who has no pigs? Great, this is who this talk is for. Fantastic, you're in the right spot. Who does have pigs? Couple folks? Okay, so who's pasture finishing? Okay, great. Who has up to 10 pigs? Who has finishing up to 25? Up to 50? No? Okay, great, that you're in the right spot. I've had at PFI when I gave this talk, I was like, well, I'm already finishing hundreds of pigs on pasture. It's like, get out of here. Cool, good to know who's in the room. So I'm Dana Burtness. My husband and I run Nettle Valley Farm. We're in Spring Grove, Minnesota. It's about 45 minutes southwest of here, so really close in the Driftless. So our whole deal is that we direct market whole and half pasture finished hogs within about 2.5 miles of our farm. So all the way up to the Twin Cities, all the way down to Iowa City, and sort of everywhere in between. We're not certified organic, but our feed is certified organic, and we use a lot of certified organic practices. And if I could find certified organic feeder pigs, maybe I'd think about it. But none of our customers are all that excited about certified organic. They just want happy pigs, and they do want organic feed. Yep, so there we are, edge of the Driftless area. Here's our very strange layout. I always like to joke that we have the weirdest property line in Houston County. We originally bought ruminant land. That's the original 67 acres. And because I used to be a vegetable farmer, and when I quit that, I knew I wanted to get into livestock and wanted a lot of pasture and woods. So originally the plan was like, oh, there's a lot of oak trees here. We're going to finish our pigs on acorns, and we'll talk about that later about why. Don't immediately jump to that. So now we're doing mostly just ruminants in the wooded valley. We rent another 20 acres to graze our pigs on, and then we were lucky enough, we were gonna build on our original land, but then we were lucky enough to buy this little homestead with buildings and stuff. Very strange layout, but we're making it work for us because land is expensive, and I think if we had waited for the perfect piece, we'd still be waiting. A couple of shameless plugs, since I have your attention. We do participate in the Savannah Institute apprenticeship program for agroforestry. So we're not doing agroforestry with the pigs yet, but we are doing a ton of silvopasture work with brush goats in the valley. It's paid, you get a place to live, so just spread the word on that. And then also we run an incubator farm program. So we invite, welcome, come on up. We welcome folks who have maybe some experience already, but not management experience, but they're not quite ready to buy or lease their own farms. So they want to manage their own enterprises for 1 to 3 years on our land, and then they graduate and go off and farming. So we farm. So we've had one round of incubatees come through our farm, and they're both still farming. My husband and I have replaced ourselves. I feel like that's a success. So a little bit of my story. We, like I said, I used to be a vegetable farmer in another life. Made the switch to, when I started learning about regenerative ag, permaculture, all that, it was like livestock, that's where it's at. So kind of on a whim, doing all the things that I'm about to tell you not to do, we got 3 large blacks back in 2015, 2016, fell in love with pigs just immediately. They're just such little stinkers. I really identify a lot with pigs. You know, they don't like to be very hot. They love to nap, they love to cuddle, they love to eat. Like, I am a pig in many ways. So I really identify with the pigs. So we totally fell in love. We started with pasture, 10 Berkshire Mulefoots, then went to 25, 40, 50, and then COVID hit, and we had a waiting list for our holes and halves as of April, and so then we went up to 73. And then we've been, we're up to 85 this year. And that's been sort of our progression. That's my full-time job. My husband works full-time off the farm, from the farm, so he works his full-time job and then helps me out about quarter time during our busy season. But that's the scoop. Another cool thing that we do, has anybody heard of Featherstone Farm in Minnesota? Yeah, probably I think the biggest organic vegetable farm. What we have a sweet deal with them where we trade them a whole hog at the end of the year for all of their cull produce. So obviously best stuff goes to their CSA and wholesale, second best food shelf, third best pigs. Although we find some treasures in there every once in a while, so that's kind of nice. Our customers love this. It's not necessarily, they're half an hour away. This is mostly water. It doesn't make money, but the flavor from the pigs, this year they ate a lot of yellow watermelon. Chef's kiss. So what we're gonna cover today is all this. So let's leave most questions to the end unless it's like a clarifying question about an acronym or something. Cool? All right. So we're gonna not cover some things today. We're not gonna talk about farrowing because I have never farrowed before. I don't know anything about that, and that's very intentional. I absolutely respect folks who do, but I'm still at the stage of my life where I want to focus on finishing. All my mentors said, if you're going to get into pigs, finishing is like undergrad, farrowing is like PhD postdoc. It's really hard. So many things can go wrong. So get your sea legs with finishing first. So I'm going to pass that along to you and strongly suggest that. I also really like having no livestock over the winter, just to do other things, odd jobs and travel and stuff. We're also not going to talk about high or really hot, dry climates. Anybody's from hot, dry, like desert? No, great, okay. It doesn't translate as well because forage just doesn't regrow as quickly. We're also not going to talk about winter pasture finishing, also because I've never done that. And the pigs don't taste as good because they're not getting all that fresh forage. You can totally do it, but I've never done it because customers want that amazing flavor profile. So I just want you all to take some giant handfuls of salt with what you learned today because there's just no foolproof formula. Anytime you're working with livestock and trying to integrate them out into a more natural system, like if you want equations and formulas and rubber stamps, that's when you get into CAFO farming. That's like when anytime you're doing pasture farming, that you got to use all your critical thinking skills. You got to have spirit of curiosity, constantly experimenting, observing, changing things. So nothing I say today will directly translate onto your farms, but hopefully I can give you a good sense of what to try and maybe what not to try. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with sort of taking a more holistic vision of planning your farm and making sure that you've got a good work-life balance, especially with pigs, since they can be so difficult. I would encourage you to really hone in on your why. And this could be a whole presentation about holistic management and life design as it pertains to farming. But I will say, AtinaDiffley.com, the woman who founded Gardens of Egan, she has an entire website of free holistic management training materials that are amazing. AtinaDiffley.com. But just, you know, ask yourself, like this pig is asking itself, what is the point of all this anyways? Like, why are you adding pigs? That's a really good thing to think through. Do you want to utilize a waste stream? Do you want to do agritourism? Do you want to do just meat for your family? Do you want a profitable enterprise? That will shape a lot of how you're raising the pigs. So email me too if you want a list of planning resources. So I encourage you to think very carefully about your why, your overwhelming why, because pigs can be very challenging and often, and it kind of boils down to the difference between omnivores, monogastrics, and herbivores, ruminants. So monogastrics, we're a monogastric, mono ones, gastric stomach. We've got one stomach, we eat all the things, and we thrive on a variety of things in our diet. Ruminants evolved to thrive off of forage and grasses alone. So oftentimes when I have people come up to me, they're like, I want to get started with pigs. I heard about this breed of pig that doesn't root very much and just grazes and doesn't eat grain. And I'm like, yeah, that's a sheep. you need to plan on a feed bill with monogastrics. It'd be like us trying to thrive off of salad, only eating forage, asking a pig to only eat forage. There are people out there who do it, but they always have very specific, special circumstances. Like there's this one guy who's big on the internet, doesn't feed any grain, has like a huge dairy plant right next to him, so they drop off semis of whey that they can just constantly feed the pigs, which is an awesome source of lysine. This barrel down here is like pasture pigs 202, but basically there's an amino acid called lysine that is a limiting factor. If they don't get enough of that, it doesn't matter what else they're eating, they're just not going to grow very well. And that is usually most accessible via grain. So this is a big thing. If you take just a handful of lessons away, don't treat your pigs like cattle, because they're just not. They're not. That's backwards. This next few slides are going to sound like I am trying to talk you out of pasturing pigs, and maybe I am a little bit. They can just be uniquely challenging. Who's had a vegetable garden? Yeah, so you rototill. Would you, if after 5 days of rain, would you ever rototill your soil? No, you would not, because it causes compaction, disturbance. Pigs are all like little rototillers that don't turn off. Never. And so this happened in a day. And that was after a couple inches of rain. And this field is still having a hard time bouncing back. So rooting around, trampling, there's always going to be high traffic areas. It's just challenging. You wouldn't get that sort of thing with a goat. Would you get that sort of disturbance with a sheep? No. Also, so much poop. So much poop with pigs. Ruminant poop is, I think, lovely. It smells just fine. It's especially like goat and sheep poop. It's nice little pellets. Not gonna lie, pig poop, it smells like human poop. Very, very close. So it's a different odor profile. There's a lot of it. How many pounds do you think a 300-pound sow poops in a day? If you know, just guess. 25 pounds of poop a day. It's a lot. It's a lot of poop. Because it's just a lot of poop. It's a lot of manure management. Granted, on pasture, it's easier, but just think about that. Also, they are so strong. A 80-pound pig, I swear, has the strength of 10 angry men. And that doubles if you're trying to get a pig to do something it doesn't want to do. And they're very curious, and they're very easily bored. And so all that combined can be labeled as destructive. So you just have to be, I wouldn't call it destructive. I'd say they're very curious and just very passionate about their curiosity. But they're very hard on infrastructure. We're boarding some sheep right now on our farm, and I'm just amazed at how easy they all are. You know, like one wire tie on a piece of fence. And it's like, no, you got to Fort Knox it if it's pigs. They're very smart, but very trainable. You know, that's a pros and cons. Higher potential for injury. Their bite force of their jaws, it's intense. Google, or maybe don't Google, pig bite injuries. And it's pretty intense. You're not going to get bit in the same way by a sheep. Ours usually, pigs explore via taste and snout. So ours usually give us one sort of warning schnoot, we call it, and then the next one's usually a chomp. Pigs are not necessarily aggressive, but just being curious, they can, you see pictures on the internet of like a kid feeding a pig some sunflower seeds, and it's just like, oh my God, that kid's gonna lose a hand. And they're not exactly herd animals. You can sort of herd pigs. They're not prey, but they're not exactly predators either. So they're sort of in this interesting category on their own. They're so glorious though. You know, if you really get along with pigs and they get along with you and you've got the land for it, oh, it is just a dream come true, especially since how many people, like how often do you see this on the landscape? Pigs outside living their best piggy lives. Also the flavors, incredible. There's no comparison of a pasture finished, I don't care what breed it is, pasture finished pig on good feed, fresh air, versus a CAFO, a factory farm pig. Do we know what I mean by CAFO? Like 2,600 pigs in a barn? Yeah, there's just no comparison. They can, asterisk, be amazing at converting waste. So if you have some sort of waste stream, we'll talk more about this later. There's a lot of caveats there. I just realized I still have my gum in my mouth. My apologies. Big picture, respect the nature and needs of the pig. Rahe does a great job of tree-range chicken. It's like we design our systems starting with the nature and the DNA of the creature we're focusing on. So I'd encourage you to do that with pigs too. So do you actually want pigs? Or do you actually want a ruminant? Like if you want something that you're not putting a ton of money into and you've got a lot of forage, maybe what you want is a sheep. Also, do you really want pigs or do you just want pork? You know, I guarantee you, somebody within 2.5 hours of you is doing pastured pork, and they're really passionate about it. So maybe you're already doing really, you've got your veggies really dialed in. Like, I love mutton, and I love tomatoes. I do not want to have sheep, and I don't even have a vegetable garden, because I've got friends who are out there doing what they're good at passionately, and I just trade with them. So I have a lot of farmers who come to me, and they're like, I really want bacon, so I want pork, or I want to raise pigs. It's like, well, you can buy bacon. You don't have to do your own thing. I think that's just a nice thing to get in our heads. So today we're just going to assume that you all want amazing meat for yourselves and your families, and you want a profitable enterprise. Good, fair enough? Sound good? Okay, we got some nods. So why pasture-finished pigs as opposed to just deep-bed them? Well, first and foremost, pig health and happiness. Once you have seen a pig do zoomies in a field of clover, it is so hard to go back. I mean, deep-bedded hogs are perfectly, like the Nyman style of doing hogs is perfectly fine, like great pork to eat, love to support those farmers. And like once you realize how novelty-driven pigs are and how much joy they get from all the different kinds of forages, it's just a whole nother level of happiness. And you know, if it fits well with you, potential farmer happiness. I would be really bored to do pigs in a barn. Because I love being out with my pigs on the pasture. Flavor, talked about that. More exercise means nice dark meat, lots of intramuscular fat, aka marbling, where the flavor is. Potential soil health improvements, also potential soil health degradation if you don't do it right. Pigs have some land clearing ability. Again, if that's your main goal, I'd suggest a forestry mower and some goats. I have a slide here of a before and after. They can do that. Use for some marginal land or pasture renovation, that's possible. Just yesterday I saw a great slide about pastured pigs eliminating reed canary grass and then planting prairie into that. That was cool. Pigs love seeds and grain, and so they are great for pollinator and wildlife habitat. We'll talk a little bit more about this later, but all I plant for my pastures are deer plot mix and pollinator mixes because they love to, you know, let stuff flower and go to seed. That's what the pigs are going to get a lot of nutrients out of. And yeah, less odor of pigs on pasture, still some. Oh, gosh darn it. Okay, here we go. Okay, so please think through, don't do what I did. Please think through the following things before you get your pigs. I can't tell you how many times in the pasture pig groups on Facebook we saw people who were like, I got 30 free pigs. I put them outside. Wait, what do I feed them? Like, don't do that. There's just insane amounts of resources out there. Books, webinars, everything. You can email me. Get a mentor. Just think, even at just spending a day or two, you'll already be way ahead. There's anything you'd ever want to know out there on the interwebs. So I also want you to do sort of a community livestock services checklist. So first of all, like, who are your ride or dies in your neighborhood? Because inevitably, your pig's going to get out in the middle of the night on a Sunday, and you're going to be stressed. Who are you going to call to help you get your pigs back in, or any livestock for that matter? I think there's this, in my opinion, dumb narrative about, like, self-reliance and independence, and I don't need anybody else. Like, true sustainability and resilience, in my opinion, comes from community interdependence and working together. And that's where you're going to find a lot of joy and support with livestock. Before you get pigs, call the processors in your area and see if they even have slaughter dates for you, unless you're planning on doing just meat for yourself. Like, some of our processors are booked 2 years out. So call them, and have a cull processor too. We're too busy to do on-farm slaughter, so we have a guy that if a pig hurts itself or just stops growing, we can drop them off in the middle of the season. That's a good thing to have. Large animal vets, call around and get a relationship going with a vet before you get pigs. They want to know you before you need to know them, okay? Because oftentimes there aren't even people who speak pig, vets who speak pig in the area. So Miranda is a vet back there. She's laughing. She knows. Find them before. Have them out to your farm. That way, if you do need antibiotics, they can see what you got going, potentially even give you a prescription so you have it on hand, because oftentimes early intervention is better. Where's your feed mill? We are lucky we have one 15 minutes from our house, so delivery is fairly cheap, but are you going to have to drive 5 hours away with your trailer to get pallets of feed? Figure that out. Sources of bedding, straw, hay, wood chips. You want a lot of bedding, more than you think you need. Transport. You don't need to own a truck and a trailer, but who can you hire or who can you borrow to get those pigs to slaughter? And get a mentor or three. Better yet, get two mentors who disagree with each other. Get on a Zoom and let them duke it out. You'll learn a lot. So which model? There's two main models of pasturing hogs. There's the fully pastured model and the wagon wheel hub model. First, we'll talk about the fully pastured model. Pretty self-explanatory. So you got your pigs, and then you got all your stuff. Pigs need a lot of stuff, unlike cattle or sheep. You know, cattle and sheep, you've got some mineral, you got some water, they're good to go. Pigs need shelter, food, water, a way to cool off. So the fully pastured model, you got your temporary fencing, and then you move them and all their stuff. And then the wagon wheel hub is where their stuff stays in the middle, and you move the fence around. But we will start with the fully pastured model. Back when we used to do this, this is what it looked like for us. And so we had, feed, shade in the back there because they need so much shade, water, and then we would move all of this and it took us forever. So we've moved away from this. Also, you've seen this picture already, but they can do so much damage in such a short amount of time. When there's, climate change is real, we're having these huge droughts, huge storms, we're gonna have more and more extreme weather events. And that's when pasture damage can happen and soil health can go way down. Some people just say, well, that's okay, just wring the noses of the hogs. Okay, if you are then also, in my opinion, willing, so a pig experiences life through its nose, right? And when you wring it, that means it's painful every time they want to root. So I say, sure, wring the hog noses. If you are also then willing to burn your fingertips every week, so every time you try to touch something, it's painful. Does anybody want to do that? No, don't wring your hog noses. If you are willing to do that, then go for it. But I feel like that's the only fair trade-off. Pros and cons to both systems, for sure. It works great for beginners, the fully pastured model, especially for small numbers. Although like Jordan Green, J&L Green Farm down in Virginia, he does hundreds of hogs with the fully pastured model. So he can make it work. Extremely mobile, especially for trailer-trained hogs. And then, especially if you're doing agroforestry or civil pasture, you can fit between rows of trees. I'm obviously biased. I got a lot of cons here. You use so much bedding. Every time you're moving, you're leaving all your bedding behind, especially if it's thick enough. It's just sitting there. Way more labor. If labor was free and we lived in a perfect world where we all had perfect backs, this wouldn't matter so much, but it's a lot of labor. Potential for huge amounts of soil disturbance and compaction, especially, that's the hardest one. Disturbance isn't a bad thing, but compaction often is. It's harder to keep the pigs really comfy. Our customers are going to want high animal welfare, and you want to make sure that they are comfy, cozy, nobody's having to sleep in the mud, everybody can get out of the rain. It's also more dangerous moving stuff around, especially if you're on a slope, and can require bigger horsepower equipment. What we've switched over to in the last few years, and actually we started with this, went away from it and came back, is the wagon wheel hub model. And you can see why it's called the wagon wheel hub model, because it looks like a wagon wheel. Their stuff stays in the middle, and then you use temporary fencing. So this, I was inspired by the Rodale Institute. They have like the Cadillac of systems, because they're a nonprofit and they have the money. Here's ours in sort of theory on Google Maps. If you turn it 90 degrees, we joke, we don't have a wagon wheel, we have a hot air balloon model because our barn is down here, and then this is the pasture. It's like this because we don't own this land. This is what it's like in practice with some aerial footage. So here's our hub, laneway, temporary fencing, and then their paddock. And you can incorporate other livestock like chickens into to manage flies. Gosh darn it. Here's some video camera footage or a picture of what it's like inside. So we got the feed. So we never even touch our feed because the feed mill just comes and dumps it into these two feeders that can hold, 8 tons at a time. Right? Yeah, 8 tons at a time. And It's fantastic. So much less labor. They've got their water maximum comfy, max comfy cozy. When we do see that there's 5 days of rain coming, we close them in, and we call this area the lobby. They can still be outside running around, fresh air, sunshine, but just not access pasture. You can totally do this on a small scale, just with, this is what we did our first year, just cattle panels, T-posts. I would probably add like a foot of wood chips in the little central sacrifice area, but really easy to do. Lot of pros. You can just keep the pigs in when it's wet in a sacrifice area where you can manage their comfort and manage pasture health. Lot less labor, less bedding, and the bedding you do use, then you can intentionally compost. It requires almost no equipment if you do a really small scale. You're just moving fence around. Easier for surprises. You know, like for your farms, do you have a plan if you break your leg? Do you have a plan if you need your appendix out or if your mom needs to have surgery and you need to leave the farm for a week? It's so much easier, you know, in case of emergency to just close pigs into that hard fenced wagon wheel so you're not worrying about the electric fencing. Also, you can attach, like we do, a handling facility, a hospital pen, a chute, a ramp for the trailer, and then you have the bulk feed option, which is really easy. Some cons, for sure, compaction and bare ground in that laneway. And the lobby area, we've added concrete to that space. Question mark about the parasite egg count, because the more I learn about swine parasites, the less I'm concerned about them, but they're still definitely an issue. And then our biggest thing is fly and manure management, since you still have that concentrated amount of, oh no, that's not what I wanted. Okay, dupe, nope. Any questions so far? Sweet. Okay. Thank you. So Steve Diebel of Golden Bear Farm is another great resource. So he has this mobile wagon wheel hub model. Love it. So hard fencing plus a laneway. Great. The pigs are very happy. So finding feeder pigs. So this is my hot take of the day. Don't worry that much about breeds when you're getting started. I would rather eat a pink pig raised on pasture and organic feed than I would the fancy schmanciest heritage breed raised inside in a barn. Also, when you're finding feeder pigs, you can't be that picky. It's more about lard versus meat. So some pigs like Mangalitsas, Kuni Kunis, Guinea Hogs, those are going to be really, really fatty pigs that you won't be able to free feed. Their pork chop's gonna be that big, but great for people on the keto diet, you know, lots of fat. So just get a meat breed, nice sturdy heritage breed cross if you can find it. And you'll all say like, what about whatever breed, the new hot breed? Usually it's people are pushing that breed because they're selling breeding stock for really high prices. So just trust but verify in that. And bigger is better when you're starting out. Like, there's a lot less that can happen to a 60-pound to 100-pound pig than a 20-pound pig. You don't want to just be bringing 20-pound feeder pigs in. Pink and white pigs are risky because they can get sunburnt just like us. I am fine with the blue butt cross, which is mostly pink, because my feeder pig supplier has bred them to not, they're just very hardy and they're born, he farrows on pasture. So I don't worry about it, but you definitely should starting out. Cheap is expensive. Like, you think you find a deal on Craigslist, there's probably a reason. Like, spend as much as you can on really good feeder pigs, and it will save you money and stress in the long term. Do not buy from the sale barn. That is a biosecurity nightmare. Just don't do it. Thank you. Please and thank you. Buy from farmers who have similar goals, and also buy from somebody who has a meat program, because that means they're culling without hesitation, because they can sell that meat. If you're buying from someone who only sells breeding stock, I would worry about that. Stay away from show pigs. They've been bred for different stuff than what we're going after. Lean on your established networks. If you're near me, email me and I can help connect you, or I can always, some pastured pig farmers like me, I'll add on to my order and it'll get shipped to my farm, then you can come pick it up. Visit the farms if possible, get a video tour, that would be okay. That's what I did. I've never actually been to my farrower's farm, but he gave me an extensive tour, and he's a good communicator. But if you are going, bring an experienced pig farm with you, pig farmer. Use all your senses, you know, listen for sneezing, look at their eyes, get a vibe check, see how the farmer interacts with their pigs. Ask for references. That's totally a normal thing to do. They should be happy to give you references. And most importantly, write an agreement. With all of these things, don't write these down. I'll send you these if you want to email me. But most importantly, the things you have agreed to, and then what happens if those are not met. So what happens if the pigs show up covered in lice? What happens if the pigs show up and they're twice as big or half the size as you agreed to? I recommend both of you beforehand, of course, signing this agreement, and then also find a third-party mediator, who, like another trusted farmer who can be neutral and help you sort stuff out, because stuff happens. All of these things have happened to me, and I've had to deal with it without a written agreement or without a third-party mediator. And if they don't want to do that, that's a red flag, in my opinion. Yeah. Biosecurity. So you just want to make sure that the farm that they're coming from has, like, practices common sense biosecurity practices. Like, they don't go to their neighboring farm wearing the same boots and bringing back. It's basically just about a transfer of illness. If you want an in-depth on biosecurity, raise your hand. Miranda in the back can give you an in-depth rundown on pig biosecurity. Yeah.
Could you speak to the advisability of getting all your feeder pigs from one farm?
Only get your feeder pigs from one farm. Do not mix and match. That is just a recipe for disaster. And talk to your other folks in the area about what you should get your pigs vaccinated for. For example, we have erysipelas in the wild bird population around us. It's also called diamond skin disease. It's terrible. You have to use a lot of strong antibiotics to get rid of it. Simple vaccination takes care of that. So that's the nice thing about buying all your pigs from one place. Don't mix and match. Thank you. Thanks, Jack. Timing. So we'll go through this kind of quickly, but I love for starting out spring to fall, just because then that crucial flavor development period, the last couple months of their life, lines up with all the goodies, the nuts and the apples and the melons, and your customers will appreciate that. So our average is that they're born in March and April. We get them in June, and then they're ready for harvest in October or November. So we average a 2 pound a day daily gain. So every day, on average, they're gaining 2 pounds. So that's how we plan out our slaughter dates. But I would say that's after we've been doing this for almost 10 years, so I would not plan on, right off the bat, 2 pounds average daily gain. They're great in, so you can use marginal wooded pastures or open pasture. Pigs are, if you put, Darby Simpson always says this, if you put a pig down in the middle of an open field, what's it going to do? It's going to run to the woods. So pigs love being in the woods. If we had a different farm layout, I would be back doing the wagon wheel hub in the woods. There's lots of shade. They can and do some land clearing. I think this was about a day of difference. So they trample stuff down. They love the wild plants like nettles and raspberries. They will be so happy in the woods. Quick note about things like acorns. So, you know, we all hear about Jamón Ibérico and like, yeah, I'm gonna do that. Okay. It's 5 acres of oak trees, of huge oak trees per pig over there. So, and also when the acorns fall, everything loves an acorn. So you're competing with the deer and the squirrels. So don't bank on it. You're not, by the time the pigs get to it, you'll have lost a lot. But they do love them. Also, if your woods look like this, don't put livestock in there. Certainly do not put pigs. If you have a high quality, like nice forest, keep the pigs out of it. So pros, huge pros of keeping pigs in the woods, shade. Pigs can't sweat. They cannot sweat. They get sunburned. They need a lot of shade. Reduce feed costs a little bit and maybe a little bit increased average daily gains from tree crops, but probably more from just the shade and the comfort. Trees provide scratching posts. They love scratching their butts on trees. Although they love scratching their butts on trees. So if there are fancy trees in there that you don't want to get pushed over, that's something to think about. More diversity of forage, lots of medicinal plants in the woods, cheaper land if you're going to look to buy or rent. A lot of fencing difficulties. Huge erosion potential. You can't really maneuver around there as easily with tractors. Much harder to repair if your pigs do a bunch of damage, and yeah, damage to trees. Like if you want to develop an anger problem, like try to do netting in brushy woods. That will raise your blood pressure. Open pasture is what we do because of our layout. It's so maneuverable. You can plant exactly what you want. It's easy to repair the ground. You can more intentionally reduce your feed costs by planting grains for them to hog down. You can also maintain the lushness of the pasture with sheep or cattle. Of course, there's the loss opportunity costs of potentially that could be pasture for cattle or maybe even crops or horticulture. It's more expensive land. And increased shade, heat, and sunburn risk. You can lose a pig to heat stress and in minutes. It's really sad. There's plenty of stories out there. Someone's like, okay, I'll be back in 30 minutes with their shade and some water, and by the time they come back. Our pigs don't like to be over 65 degrees. It hits 65 and they head for the shade. That's how, me too. I mean, I get it. What to plant? This is the fun part if you're in open pasture. We essentially only plant deer plot mixes and then pollinator mixes. They're perfect. I tailor-made a perennial, we'll talk about annuals first. This is a fantastic mix. I love Albert Lee Seed Company. They've got this pollinator max mix that Xerces developed, but it ends up being just fantastic for pigs. And I've noticed a ton of people who are into pollinators are the kind of people who are super into pastured pork. It's a great tie-in. Green Cover Seed, their smart mix calculator, super fun to play around with. And then for perennial mix, my favorite is the big, I think it should be called the big ham mix, but it's the big rack mix. It's a deer plot mix. So it's also a pro if you're renting your land for hunters. I tailor-made a perennial mix, and then I looked and it was like, this exact mix. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to buy this. And it's beautiful. They love it. Lots of legumes, lots of soft grasses. Yeah, they're into it. Pigs in orchards, doable. Be very, very careful because chances are some high value trees in there. Eliza Greenman from hogtree.com is sort of the person I would trust with that info, so look her up. So I think the best, most sustainable way to do pigs would be in a wagon wheel hub surrounded by silvopasture, which is the intentional integration of trees, pasture, and livestock. That's the dream. So if I can ever buy that 20 acres of land, this is what we're going to do. Eliza is also developing a system where she can fully finish pigs off of fruit and fodder. Another reason to look her up. So overall forage tip, go for diversity. Again, I can't say this enough. Pigs get bored really easily. So as many species as you can put in there. Have fun with it. If you get free seed from somewhere, or you've got some leftover garden seeds, throw it out there. See what happens. Especially vegetable seeds, because then you can sort of like forage, you know, before the pigs get there, take the best stuff and then let them clean up. Have seed on hand for replanting. At a certain point, you'll probably develop a seed bank that you want out in your pastures, but they will root up spaces and then just throw some seed out before you move them. They'll trample it in, bada bing, bada boom. And weeds are forage too. So I plant these fancy ass pasture mixes, and guess what my pigs eat first? Dandelions. They go nuts for dandelions. They love lamb's quarter. Giant ragweed has incredible amounts of protein in the leaves. So don't forget about weeds. I wouldn't say don't only plant weeds because they really don't like burdock or thistles. Some people's pigs eat burdock or thistles, but not mine. But it's fine. That's food too. Just have fun with it. So when do you move your pigs? This was one of my, when we weren't doing the wagon wheel hub, this is one of the rotations. So how are we doing on time? Halfway through? Okay, great. So this is one of those terrible answers. It just depends. Just depends on what your goals are. If you want bare soil, like they were doing in that reed canary grass field, to replant something, obviously you're going to leave your pigs in for a lot longer than if you're managing for soil health. Just use your observation skills. Experiment. It will depend on how big the pigs are, how dense your forage is, how well established your forage is. You know, if you put them out on a field of buckwheat that had been just tilled ground, they'll, you know, get it all flattened in a day. But if it's established sod and perennials, they'll have more time in there. If it's wet, if it's just bone dry, oftentimes pigs will just graze. They really won't root all that much. But the second it rains, they're going to be in there searching out tubers, insects, all the yum-yums. Monitor for compaction. That's a big thing. Disturbances can be sometimes okay, but compaction rarely is. We only graze each part of our pasture once. So if you can do that, that's great, or every other year, especially if you're hitting it hard. But give it at least a month of rest, and obviously try not to put them back in there if the forage levels aren't right. So how many pigs per acre? Of course, that's another, like, it depends, but here's sort of something to go on. So we do no more than 10 pigs per acre, and that's with a wagon wheel hub. So if you've got 8 acres available and you have a wagon wheel hub, you know, maximum 80 pigs. Obviously, start conservatively. It's so much easier to grow as opposed to get halfway through the year and all of a sudden you no longer have pasture pigs, you have dirt lot pigs. And that's the thing, as an aside, there's sort of like a thing in the pastured pig world where I like to call them pastured pigs and then actually pastured pigs. Because there's a lot of people who say it's dirt, they're pastured pigs, but they're just out on a field of dirt, like a mud lot. Those are dirt pigs, dirt lot pigs. That's fine, but just don't call them pastured pigs. So I will push you in that direction. And also don't put your pigs in the woods and just moonscape it unless you're trying to kill the woods. That's also not pastured or even forest-fed pigs. Those are destructive pigs that are going to get the whole industry like banned because there's a lot of people doing that. So I'd say start conservatively, 3 or 4 to an acre without the wagon wheel hub, maybe 5 or 6 to an acre with the wagon wheel hub. Play around with it. Pigs need shelter. They need shelter. They need shelter primarily for shade, but they really like to be out of the wind and out of the rain. They, you know, a pig can be wet and a pig can be in the wind, but they can't be both. They're hardy creatures, but we want to, for gains and for their own just comfort, we want to make sure that we're keeping them cozy. And simple is just fine. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. We built this on the left here with just some scrap lumber and some cattle panels and a scrap tarp, and that held up. Well, we still use that for other livestock now. It's just fine. Here's a nice A-frame that you can build. Lots of plans out there. You just need to have enough space, more than enough space, I would say, for every pig to be able to lie down out of the elements, completely out of the elements, and that means that they're dry, too. I have seen a lot of people who have enough shade but don't have enough dry space. You really don't want your pigs to be just sleeping in mud or having to just tromp around in mud. Basically, a good rule is, like, if it would make you sad and uncomfortable while you're camping, maybe think about how that would affect a pig. Nyman is awesome because they put their hog standards just on the Nyman website. So when in doubt, just meet the Nyman standards, but then go above and beyond. So for instance, 112 and up pound pig means 7.5 square feet. So that's if you're trying to calculate how much shade you need or how much shelter, that's the bare minimum. Yeah, again, does not have to be fancy. Like since this is in the woods, there's not a lot of wind, this is good enough, especially if it's a larger hog. When we get to the end of the season, people are always like, how are the pigs? Is it too cold? And it's like, they are great. They're wearing like a lard suit, you know? It's when it's hot, that's when I worry about them more, truly. They handle this weather well, and the shoulder seasons, they're just fine. It's when it's hot, that's when they're stressed and you need to provide a lot more comfort. Here's another type of shelter. I will say watch out for valve stems and trailer wiring. Ask me how I know, I will rip those off. But this is Steve's setup. Again, he's a fantastic resource. Yeah, think just comfy, cozy. Don't be stingy with your bedding, because especially when you have those big rain events and you're keeping them off pasture, they still want to be able to burrow and dry off and root around and get away from the flies and just load it up, because that's all just future fertility, so don't be stingy. And it's so cute. Look at that pig. So happy. Water. Okay, so this is actually our hospital pen, not on pasture, but I just put this out here to demonstrate how much love pigs love to cool off and be wet. If you have your water source open, they are going to climb in it. They are going to dump it out and roll around in it. So this is to show that, like, water, like this, I would never consider this to be their source of drinking water. This is our little portable wallow for our hospital pen. And then this is more the style of water that we like, so a nipple water. And pigs need water. So in the winter, I've heard you can get away with giving them all they can drink twice a day, but it's a limit. Just like lysine, that amino acid, water is a limiting resource. If they don't get enough water, they're going to stop eating, and you don't want that because you want your pigs to be growing, you know, hitting that 2 pounds a day. So make sure that it's fresh. It's not full of algae. Make sure it's clean. I have a lot of doubts about drinking water out of ponds, especially livestock or ag runoff ponds. Fine for a wallow, but not for clean drinking water. Super cheap. You can find these at most farm stores or online, the nipple water with the bulkhead. And I think Nyman probably has some good resources about how many nipples you need per pig. But just, as always, just do as many as you can afford. And that's a good way to do it. If you have a tractor that can lift one of these giant 275-gallon tanks, this is such a good way. Just cut the top off, put six around, and they love that. And then you can raise and lower this by adding like a plastic pallet or a platform under it. But for smaller numbers of pigs, just a 55-gallon drum. And this is also a great way if you want to add apple cider vinegar to their water. That's fantastic. They will love you for that. Here's how Steve does his platforms. Oh, all of his pastures have pressurized water. We don't. So he can do this sort of thing. But notice how this is angled out of the pen. That's to keep them from just forming a giant wallow right there. But also, we talk about compaction. Like, look at that. That is going to be bare dirt for a long time. So these are the trade-offs that you have to make. So anytime there's water, they will compact the crap out of it. Steve does. Yeah. Yes. Under and up. So I'm going to repeat what Jack said, more of a comment, but the pigs get under and push up with their snouts. Again, strength of 10 men. And I'll find that design, or just contact Steve at Golden Bear Farm. He's the nicest guy. He'd probably just share. He had a local guy weld up those special panels. The ones that they can stick their faces in, not my favorite. And that's what we currently have, and I'm going to switch away from them because I guarantee you, if you're not cleaning them out every day, they will get anaerobic and gross. And just think about it. If you have one sick pig that has boogers and sticks its face in there, then all of a sudden, all the water in that water is boogified. we had these for a season, and then I sold them. They're also really hard to clean. You just want to be able to sanitize stuff, freshen things up. Jordan Green loves these things, so he, you know, people who are doing really great pasture finish hogs are using these. I don't like them. The nipple water is where it's at. So it's like, yes, of course, they get the boogers there, but that's like on one nipple, and you can clean it off, whereas these have these annoying, like, side parts that you can't access unless you take it apart. Dumb design. And also, 85 gallons does not last you that long. They will flip these and roll them out and push your fence over. Another reason that I don't like them. You can put them on skids, though. Brower is going to sue me at some point for talking so much smack about their waters. So the wallow question. So pigs out in nature will always have a wallow because they hate to be hot. Pigs in wild pigs, they get external parasites, and they need mud to cool off and also to help with parasites. However, in a pastured setting, like, oh, man, this is like just soil catastrophe right here. Like, I still have some wallows from many years ago that are just bare. Granted, you go back some years and there's tadpoles in there. So you can, if you want to, very intentionally use your wallows to make little habitat spots. Cool. Oftentimes, I mean, we're on fully rented land, and my landlord will kill me if I put giant wallows all over the place. Also, permanent wallows, cesspools. I cannot tell you how many times I have looked a pig in the eye while it is in the wallow, pooping and drinking out of the water at the same time. It's nasty. Jude Becker out of Iowa, he does organic farrow-to-finish pigs year-round in Iowa. He has gone completely away from wallows, and he's seen just a drastic reduction in health problems because they're gross. They're really gross. There's obviously some sort of evolutionary thing that the pigs have going on that they do that, but it's nasty. And then it smells, and, you know, we want to be good neighbors. So, you know, anything that can be too stinky and bugging your neighbor. So just think carefully about the wallow. We have decided to fully move away from the wallows. And we have also seen way better, far fewer health issues. Steve does sort of a portable wallow. My problem with this is that they fight a lot over these, and then the smallest ones don't get any shade or wallow. This is our compromise. So this is that lobby that you saw before. So we actually concreted it in and put in a hydrant right here. And then on really hot days, we just come out here and spray them all down like 3 or 4 times a day. You could also just put an automatic timer on a sprinkler. A neighbor of mine told me that to go viral on YouTube, I should like put some sort of nose prod there so they can turn the sprinkler on themselves. But honestly, I think they would just flood the field if they did that. So it's tough. Like, we like to be an animal welfare over everything farm, except for this. It's like the one thing that they desperately want that I'm not giving them, and I've made peace with that. They still seem to be happy and healthy, and they grow quickly, and it is really fun to watch them scamper around in a sprinkler like little kids. Oh, that's backwards. Okay, so feed basics. So feed to make money. Don't feed to save money. Don't be skimping on the feed, because do your math. Make sure that whatever you're feeding the pig, you're going to make money on that when it turns into pork. So I am a huge advocate for just ad lib free feeding because of the reduction of labor, and also because I need to get my pigs to 300 pounds before that slaughter date. So I plan and budget conservatively for 1,000 pounds of feed per pig. That's even with all the pasture, that's with all the vegetables. I think of it as, like, in our diet, we mostly get our calories from protein and carbs and fats, and then we get our nutrition from, like, fruits and vegetables, right? It's kind of the same way with the pigs. Some people really, really reduce the feed, so it forces the pigs to forage more. But that's definitely stress, and if you're thinking about, you know, 300 pound pigs, and you're carrying feed in, and they each have the strength of 100 men, and they want that feed, and they're really hungry, that's kind of dangerous. So especially if you're asking an employee to do that, it's one thing if you're doing it, but if you're asking an employee to be getting in with the pigs while you're ration feeding them, and they're big, and they're hungry, I would not, as an employee, do that. So just think about that. Plenty of people ration feed, but I strongly prefer, because just like with the wallow, they're gonna fight over that feed. And so the biggest ones are gonna get bigger, and the littlest ones are gonna get littler. With free feeding, with our system, they have food 24/7. I've watched the littler pigs get up in the middle of the night and eat their fill, because the bigger pigs are sleeping, so you can just make sure everyone's getting what they need. Also, it's so much less work. So much less work. At certain parts of the season, our pigs are eating 800 pounds a day. A bucket is 35 pounds of feed. I don't know about you. I'm not doing that with a bucket. And pre-season deposits. We ask for $300 a hog, and that helps us pay for the feeder pig and pay for the feed. Our feeder pigs are like $135, and then our feed ends up being It's like $350 to $400 per pig. So that deposit really does help. And nobody bats an eye at it. Because people understand, like, you know, pay for your CSA up front. As a beginner, do not rely on waste stream or garbage feeding. You can waste stream feed, like with extra apples from your yard or nuts, but don't think of that as your main feed. Think of that as a fun bonus. As you get more advanced and learn how to balance rations and do all that, then you can play around with that. But for your first few seasons, just give them what they need. Let them forage for the bonuses. And then also garbage feeding, that's a technical term. So like if you were going to take all the post-consumer waste from like a hospital, don't do that. I would say just don't ever do that, because that's how you get like hog cholera. And you need a special legal permit to do that, because they want to make sure that you have to take it up to a boiling point for like 20 minutes or something. You have to boil it for 20 minutes and then let it cool down and then feed it out. And liquid feed slop is really difficult. And just don't feed meat to pigs. I think there's something in the federal rules that if you're selling meat to people, you cannot be feeding them meat. We definitely do. Like, dairy is awesome. Eggs are awesome. But anything that's post-consumer. The thing is, pigs are very similar to us in a lot of ways, but we can share diseases. So we can share parasites. We can share other things. And so if a piece of post-consumer food goes to a pig, like, that's how we get the next COVID virus. Like, okay, maybe not that extreme, but it's just, it's really risky. Like, that's where we got some of the yuckiest, biggest diseases in the past, was because of garbage feeding of hogs. So just don't do it as you're a starter, and don't feed them meat. Even though they love meat, they're omnivores, they will eat you. They absolutely love meat. That is not like a rural wives' tale. Like, if you have a heart attack in your pig pen, they will totally eat you. I always tell my husband, like, if I die on the farm, feed me to the pigs, because it's only fair. I've eaten a lot of them. So pork flavor, also this is a great reason to not just feed them crap and garbage, because then they will taste like crap and garbage. What you feed them directly translates into the feed. Like, I've heard stories of people who have this DNR hookup, and they get all the invasive carp out of the river, and they're like, sweet, I'm going to feed it to the pigs. Okay, fish-flavored bacon, not a good flavor. And that will happen. Same with chickens. So if you do too much flax, too much fish meal, you'll taste it in the pork. It's gross. Unless you're into that. Could be an untapped market, I guess. Minerals, vitamins, salt. Again, that's pastured pigs, 202. They need, pigs can get salt poisoning very easily from too much. They do need a really good amount, so like you're not free feeding salt to pigs. Some people do it, but don't do it as a beginner. That's in a commercial, like a professionally mixed ration. So make sure that's included. Don't get treated or medicated food. Like, a lot of the Tractor Supply, just like pig food, already has antibiotics in it, which blows my mind. Like, I need a prescription for antibiotics for my pigs, but they just sell treated feed. And the organic conference. You guys aren't. A quick note on antibiotics. There's nothing wrong with treating sick pigs with antibiotics. Nothing wrong with it. In fact, it is your duty to treat a sick pig with the right medicine at the right time. Absolutely. Even if that means you can't sell it as organic. Feeding pigs antibiotics to make them grow faster is disgusting and insane. That's weird. Nobody do that. That's, again, how we get superbugs. So I think, I will be perfectly honest, I lost a pig in our first year because I was like, I'm not going to use antibiotics. I'm above all that. Nature will heal everything. And that pig died. And I probably could have saved it, and I feel terrible about that. But I did not have my head wrapped around that it's a tool in the toolbox. Don't use it as a crutch. Certainly don't use it as a Band-Aid for poor animal husbandry. But there is a place and a time. And I found that the really expensive one-and-dones antibiotics are the best, because then you don't have to catch a pig twice a day for 3 days to give it shots. Just give it Draxxin. It's one shot. Stays in their system. Anyways, we'll talk more about that. No treated feeds. Gross. Feed does go bad. Vitamins degrade. So only get up to, my feed mill says a month tops of feed at a time. Don't get your season's worth. But really, the fresher, the better. In theory, if you could mill it every day, that'd be great. But nobody has time for that. And then you're going to have to decide if you want certified organic, transitional, corn or soy free. For our, obviously, if you're going to do certified organic pork, it has to be certified organic with no weird additives that aren't OMRI listed. For our customers, again, they don't want us, they don't need us to be certified organic, but it's really important to them. And for me, I'm surrounded by corn and bean fields. So, and I would much rather be surrounded by organic corn and bean fields. We don't feed any corn or soy. Our ration is about half and half peas and barley. And we do that because it's the old world way of doing it. If you talk to some like French pig farmers, they'll be like, oh, you're gonna poison the pigs with the corn and soy. Whereas here, it's like, you're not feeding soy, those pigs are gonna die. No, it's fine. It has fewer calories per pound, so we end up feeding more pounds, which ends up being more expensive. But I think the fat is better, it's more nutritious, and it's more flavorful. And I'm a big fan. And actually, it hasn't been any more expensive than corn and soy. Sometimes it's been cheaper. Feed is really expensive right now. Again, budget for 1,000 pounds of feed per pig. Get that number in your head before you buy your feeder pigs, because that could mean you just don't do pigs this year. Gosh darn it. These are a terrible design. Where are we? I'll just keep zooming. So you can, yeah, again, you can ration feed. I don't recommend it. I mean, with three pigs, that's fine. The feeders are really simple. Again, does not need to be fancy. It can just be half a barrel. They will try to dump stuff over. So you just make a design so it doesn't dump as easily. Here's a design from Steve about troughs, heavy-duty troughs that he has fabricated. Just because you're ration feeding doesn't mean that you can't buy in bulk. So we just drove these trash cans and they just filled them right up at the feed mill and drove them back. Lower overall feed bill because you're really pushing them to forage, and less expensive equipment. You know, those feeders, the ones that I have, are quite expensive, but they've paid for themselves many times over. And then you also have the possibility of fermenting or wetting your feed, which would be an awesome thing to do for 10 or fewer pigs. The cons, they are going to grow slower. Way increased labor and back strain, stress for you and for the pigs from all that fighting over food, potential injury, we've talked about this, and the small pigs might be competed. Something I haven't mentioned is that they are going to be way more prone to escape because they're going to be looking for food elsewhere outside the fence. Big fan of free feeding. This is what we've used. I'll never go back. Jordan Green has this DIY bulk feeder. That would be a great thing to look into if you've got these IBC tanks. Steve, again, that's his version of a free feed. And also, if you want these slides, just email me and I can send you a copy. Higher average daily gains, for sure. Reduced labor, reduced stress, basically just the flip side of that. The feed bill will be higher because they're eating more grain, but will that, in my experience, is always offset by higher gains. And escaped, the one thing that is a downside of this is that if you ration your pigs, they will follow a bucket. If you bulk feed them, they'll be harder to woo home, which is why I train them with a call and with a treat. So we'll cover that. And you can't really do wet feed. Don't feed on the ground. That's where the parasites live. That's wasteful. A lot of the minerals will just go into the dirt. Like, if you need to in an emergency, it's fine, but this is just not a good plan. I do feed apples and stuff on the ground just because that's so much. I don't know how I would contain that, but it's not ideal. Food that's free, but you have to travel for, once you count your time and the gas, wear and tear, it might not actually pencil out, but it will make the pigs so happy and your customers. I always get a couple more customers after the first like video that I post on Instagram about the pigs eating watermelons. Here we go. Train your pigs to come when you call. As simple as, we use hard-boiled eggs because we have a flock of 40 laying hens. An egg or like an apple is more enticing than grain. So if you're free feeding, it can't just be a bucket of grain because they're like, LOL, I have grain already. So a hard-boiled egg is perfect. And then you do a call. And so our pigs from all the way across the field, if I do the egg time call, they will come running. It's just a lot of fun. An egg is like the perfect treat. What's up? Egg time! Egg time! Egg time! Egg time! I have people come up to me that I've never met, and they're like, we do the egg time call during breakfast because we eat eggs for breakfast. So it's a great marketing thing. The lieutenant governor of Minnesota has come down to our farm to do egg time. It's really fun. And they love it. It's great food. It's great food, too, to have on hand for a pig that needs some TLC. It's like the hard-boiled them, though, because it makes the protein more available. And also, if you throw a raw pig out or a raw egg, it's just going to splat. Yes, Pam? They eat the shells, so yeah, do I shell the eggs? No, I do not. I love the pigs. I don't love them that much. I have been known to scramble fresh eggs for sick pigs if they need it, just because I'm a sucker. Fencing. I think most of us know generally how electric fencing works. That's the animal that's making a connection between the ground and the wire. So the less you can have the wire touching the ground in other spots, the hotter it's going to be. We use Premier One netting. Here's the 7-roll fence method. How am I doing for time? 15 minutes left. Okay, we'll cruise. I love this stuff. It's kind of expensive, but till they make virtual fencing for pigs, that's what we're going to use. You can do it through the woods. Again, if you want an anger problem or if you already have one, don't do this because it snags on everything. But it's really great. It's a great visual barrier. They just don't escape as much in my experience. Very high visibility, really durable. A big con is that it really is pig specific, so it doesn't really work with a lot of other livestock. And it tangles up if you even look at it wrong. And also, pro tip, you don't have to only connect the pieces at the end. It took me an embarrassingly long time to learn that. Some people use polywire fencing. I don't trust it. I feel like the people who use polywire fencing are constantly chasing their pigs. Some, not all, but some of them. Some people like it. Nice thing about this is that you can use it for other species. But we didn't have other species, and so we just went for the hog netting. It's harder to see, too, so opening a gate and getting the pigs to move, they can't exactly tell that it's gone, so sometimes that's slower. But yeah, if you don't mind chasing your pigs, it's fine, but I'm such a maniac. Like, I haven't had a pig out for 3 years, because twice daily checks, and also I don't want to be like that girl. Like, I am weird enough as it is in my neighborhood. I don't need them, like, complaining about my pigs being out. I've never tried this stuff, but it seems groovy. If you try it out with your pigs, let me know. You need a good ground rod. These are really nice and mobile. Don't believe the Ken Cove people, and they're like, you need 3 8-foot ground rods. And it's like, no, I've used this like 3-foot ground rod. It works just fine with mobile pigs. Train your pigs. Here's the training setting set up inside hard fencing. If you do have a wagon wheel hub, do use the 8-foot ground rod because you're not moving it. So it's easy. Buy as many jewels as you possibly can because it will pay for itself if you value your time at all and your stress at all. We use these two. So the SpeedRite is my main one. The Parmax, my backup. They're great. No complaints. Plenty of other fencers work too. Do not skimp on fence training. So set the electric fence up inside the hard fence because it teaches them when they get that zap to back up instead of go forward because they can see that hard fencing. Like, we do at least a week because I have no time for pig escapes. There it is. I like this method where you just set it up inside a hog panel and then you flop the hog panel down and then test them. And then just in case they're not ready, you can just put it back up after they rip your fence. That has happened. Essentially, just keep what they want inside the fence. Food, shade, shelter. The last major pig escape we had was when I didn't have quite enough shade and they could see a pond. They busted through that. Electric fencing is just psychological. You know, if they really need to get out, they will get out. So just don't test it. Don't encourage them to test it. 2 is 1, 1 is none. If your Energizer craps out and these little velociraptors are still testing the fence, you want to have a backup. With your fencing, with your Energizer, with your ground rods. Hot. Keep it hot. 6,000 volts or more. So that means you're going to need to mow or do whatever you need, scythe under your fence lines. And check twice a day if you can more. It's a nice walk. When the inevitable occurs, you're already going to have who? A relationship with who? Your vet. So that you are, well, right off the bat, know what to do. Be prepared to, if you only are out on pasture and you need to isolate a, so be, figure out a way to isolate a pig, because if it's sick, obviously you want it to be contained so it's not using more energy than it needs. You don't want it to give another pig that. You want it to be max cozy, comfy cozy. So quiet, cool, own food, own water. If it's not so sick, consider giving it a buddy. Like if it just hurt its leg or something, give it a buddy, a calm, similarly sized buddy. And you are gonna need to stick a thermometer up its butt. That is how, like when you call the vet, the one of the first things they're gonna ask is, does it have a fever? And so the way you figure that out is give it a take a rectal temp. And so that might mean include snaring it, so you can do that, but that's just a skill you're gonna need to learn how to do. And out on open pasture, if you're trying to wrestle a pig, and it can, this happened to my husband, the pig backed up into the fence, shot forward and flipped him. So have your hospital pen be hard fenced. And I mean, I sort of lived in just ignorant, blissful ignorance, just hoping that nothing like this will happen. Stuff will happen. Pigs flay themselves on fencing. They get ear infections. Pigs get ear infections. It won't necessarily be your fault, but they will get sick, and then you need to be ready to take care of them. Yeah, we already talked about the attitude about antibiotics. Make sure that they don't have nose-to-nose contact with other pigs. Here's, just take a picture of this. Here's everything that I think you should have on hand. Your vet might add some stuff to this list, or I can email it to you, whatever. Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, so you'll have this. Definitely have a snare. That really helps if your buddy can snare the pig around its nose, backs up, and that's when you can take the rectal temp, do it, or give a shot if you need to. Have a neighbor, or maybe you already know how to give shots, but have a neighbor teach you how to do shots. We have a system with livestock marking paint. So orange is observe, pink is problem, and green means go, which ready to harvest. That's how we sort of sort through the pigs. And I highly recommend having a scale for a lot of reasons, but when a pig is sick, normally it stops growing, and it's a great way when it start to know when it's better is when it starts growing again. Really helpful. Also for knowing who to send to after their one bad day. Deworming, such a hot topic. Basically, we deworm everybody upon arrival. Mature worms are the ones laying the eggs, and mature worms are oftentimes the only ones affected by dewormers anyways. So we do deworm everybody, but then beyond that, everybody has an opinion. We're actually doing a trial with a natural dewormer from Dr. Paul's. So far, so good. It's working, but check back in 3 years. This is my, I think, my last slide, my most important thing. Don't undercut other farmers. Don't do it. Don't on price when you're selling your pork. Don't do it, especially if you're doing it for fun. The more off-farm income you have, the higher your prices should be, not the other way around, because you have more flexibility and more of your risk covered. So there's so many people out there who don't really track their prices, and so they're like, yeah, you can have a whole hog for $200. No. Don't do that. Track your costs. Sales are a lever that should be reserved for people making their income from farming. So they, because that's just, that's, it's just harder. So like we think of ourselves, my husband has a normal adult off-farm job. And so I set our, like we sell our hogs for $6.50 a pound hanging weight plus processing and $7.50 a pound for halves plus processing. That's probably, I think that's the highest in Minnesota. And part of that is like, that is what it costs for me to make a living and me to pay people and do it right. And also I think of myself as at least people who are making, trying to make their living off of pasture pork can be like, well, at least we're not as expensive as Nettle Valley. You know, it shouldn't be the other way around. So charge what you're worth. Trailer training, try to take them in the night before. This type of sales will sort of be determined by what kind of processing you can get. This is a whole other presentation in itself. Yeah, stay curious, take pictures, tell your story, ask for help. Thank you very much. Can we have a couple minutes for questions? Great, we have 15 minutes for questions. Yes. She said, I think you did a good job of scaring me. Great. Yeah.
I
Okay. I'm listening, I'm just finding water. Yep.
And so we actually thought about getting one of the large community members, Cody Cody.
Yep.
But also, because they're not supposed to be eating, so I thought there would be less disruption to the forest, but
yeah,
also help us with some of that, and just really for like ourselves, so like 2 days. Because I know they take a long time to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know, and you obviously go to the large pigs at a Cooney Cooney's. I don't know if you have anyone you can direct me to, and then also the Agro Forestry. I don't know if you have different opinions on types of breeds there too.
Oof, I have to repeat that. I'm going to sum it up as guidance on Cooney Cooney's, duck,
and the forest
stuff. Duck Creek Pastures, I believe. I don't know them, but I follow them on Instagram. They seem to be doing a great job with Cooney Coonies, which they sell for meat. Duck Creek Pastures. I don't know them personally. Honestly, too, if you're just doing it for fun and you're just for yourself, do whatever you want. I'm talking about the context of a profitable farm enterprise. So I would say, yeah, go for it. Totally. Have fun. Just expect a lot of fat. And your other question was about agroforestry and breeds?
Well, I guess so, the pasture, I should say.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So question is about silvopasture and breeds of hogs. You know, Eliza is sort of like the person who knows about combining pigs with trees and orchards, and she used to do American guinea hogs, which were sort of in the same boat, and they were took so long to finish and were so small, and she really wanted to be able to have a profitable farm enterprise. She's moved away from them entirely. So it's really just about, especially if you've designed your silvopasture for hogs, you can protect them, you can keep them off the trees with whatever sort of temporary netting you're doing. But I still think the key for all of these systems is just being able to take the pigs off entirely when it's too wet or when the conditions aren't good. But also, I don't know, this is such a new sort of thing in our area. Give it a try and let us know. Come back and tell us about it next year. But in my experience, if you want to make money on hogs, you probably want something that finishes within 6 to 7 months and is a normal size and normal amounts of meat versus fat. Fair enough? Yes. I do. That's a great question. How much time do they spend in the hub versus in the field? We have creeper cams set up all over our wagon wheel hub, just remote cameras, so I can tell you exactly when they come and go. So it's temperature dependent. So on a nice cool day, and if the pasture is really close to the hub, it's just come and go, come and go. But once it gets really hot, they wake up before sunrise, they head out, they spend a couple hours there until it gets above 65. They come in and eat, sleep, drink, pee, poop all day. It's such a nice life. They just sleep, cuddle, and then once it gets cooler again, then they head back out until after dark. And that's pretty much what they would be doing out fully on pasture, just they wouldn't have to make that trip. But it is fun because that's when you really see the more herd behavior. It's not like some of them go out and then some of them stay. They really, it's like one will get up and all of a sudden they'll just be sort of like, oh, it's time. And then they'll all head out there together. Yeah.
Have you ever had to add like extra shade out in the pasture and encourage them to be out there? They're pretty much just like, go for it.
Have I ever had to add shade out in the pasture? They would love that. Then they might spend more time out there. Like, so the ideal would be for us to eventually like buy some land where we could plant shade trees and put that wagon wheel hub in the middle so they could do more coming and going. But no, we've never had to like train them to go out there or encourage them to go out there or anything. They just know what to do. And they want it. They get so antsy and annoyed with me when it's raining and they can't go out and be with their lushy freshies. They desperately want that fresh variety in their diets. So, yeah, no, they are just, especially after like a couple days of being in the wagon wheel hub, I'll open the gate and they will sprint all the way out there. So yeah, no. Yes. Oh, you did come in late. Sorry, I'm not trying to tease you. Pigs are not ruminants. So, I'm going to repeat the question. Asking about certain breeds doing better on just pasture. Yes, I get this a lot, this question a lot. And I would say this is for beginners. So I would say don't try to ask a pig to act like a ruminant when you're a beginner. So there are people out there who do no grain pigs, but they always have some sort of special circumstance, like freeway, because pastures generally don't have lysine in them, and that's a limiting amino acid for pigs. From grain. Lysine. And so I know, like, generally if you're really excited, like you've heard about some breed of pig, like whatever, the Cooney is sort of like the breed du jour. I think it's a bit of a like marketing scam. But I would say if you want an animal that does well in pasture and you don't need to feed grain, get a sheep. Get a goat, do cattle, don't do pigs. Don't try to push pigs to act like an animal that they're not. Fair enough? I think some of those breeds will grow way slower and they might eat less grain if you ration feed them. Were you here for the ration feeding part? But so that's a big trade-off there. You're causing a lot of stress for you and for the pig. Yeah. Yes?
You shared quite a bit of the finances, what you pay for the pig, what you get when the market.
Yep.
What are you hoping to kind of make through the season that are you willing to share that?
Sure. Yes, so question about finances and the profit margin, right? Yep, I'll share almost anything about our business except for where I get my feeder pigs from. I won't even tell my mom that. but as far as, we shoot for a 20% profit margin. Yes. I mean, if you count everything, like nobody makes any money farming, right? But yeah, very basic math. Right now, we're still in the stage of our farm where we're oftentimes, any profit we make is investing back into the farm. But yeah, I mean, I essentially shoot for paying myself $30 an hour. But that's for very part-time work. That's not like full-time year-round. And then we're paying people like 10 to 15 bucks an hour to help us out. We sell the pigs for, it ends up being like $1,400 to $1,600 per hog, and then they pay processing. We try to shoot for, 20 to 30% of that going to pay for the other stuff. But yeah, I mean, if we counted absolutely everything, it would absolutely make sense for me to go work at Quick Trip. But then I don't get to be outside with the pigs. Yeah, you always have to think of the opportunity costs, but the more straightforward answer is, yes, it can be profitable. Just depends on what you count. Other questions? Yeah?
Will a pig become nocturnal because of the temperature?
Oh, I love that question. Can a pig become nocturnal because of the temperature? I am super not nocturnal, so I would hate to be awake during the night and be watching them. So I can't tell you for sure, but I don't see why not. I do know that when I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't go back to sleep and I do check the cameras, they're all in the barn. But I don't see why they wouldn't get up and forage. But generally, in my experience, what I've observed is that they spend the night sleeping. But I think like feral hogs are extremely active at night. So yeah, no, I would love to know more about that. I don't see why not. Yes, in the back. Yes, the breeds we work with are just sort of, I love heritage breed mutts. Nice sturdy crosses. Right now, if you're buying large numbers of feeder pigs like we are, you can't really be too picky. So we mostly found a guy, a farmer who we like, who farrows, culls really hard into his meat program, and just has really nice, healthy crosses, and he'll vaccinate for what we need him to vaccinate for. He'll deworm the way we need him to. He picks up his phone. He's willing to sign an agreement. And no, I will not tell you who he is. So yeah, largely Hamp, Duroc, York crosses. Yeah.
From a dewormer standpoint, mm-hmm. I've heard pumpkin is a natural dewormer. Do you know anything about feeding the pumpkins and that being part of your deworming process?
Great question about dewormers, natural dewormers, pumpkins. That is the quickest way to start a fight in a pastured pig group. Like, literally, you will get kicked out for suggesting pumpkins as a dewormer in a couple of them. People are so intense about dewormers. Yes, it's a sort of like a old wives' tale that pumpkin seed can be a dewormer. I've never tested it. This natural dewormer from Dr. Paul's called Swinex that we are testing. We're measuring the average daily gains and a few other markers, like whether or not the liver passes inspection. The roundworm usually leaves a mark on the liver. It is working. That's been one small test. There's just a lot of anecdotal evidence. In my experience, my gut says pumpkin seed, you'd have to eat so much of it to make a difference. But the Swinex has black walnut, garlic, ginger, neem, a few other things. One pastured pig farmer who I really respect has done fecal analysis of before and after with garlic and cayenne too. One time I tried the cayenne out, but I tried to add it to the feed on a windy day, so I thoroughly dewormed my eyeballs. Don't do that. So yeah, it's a really hot topic, which is why I'm trying to do an actual study on it. It's going to be a 3-year trial. Eventually we're going to get to the point where we're comparing absolutely no dewormers with levamazole through the water and then Swinex. So I'll have that, I have 1 year of data which shows no statistical significance between the groups, which is promising. But within 3 years, hopefully I'll do some sort of like round table and share what I know. But just to warn you, if you join these pastured pig groups and you're like, I've heard pumpkin seeds a dewormer, you will get kicked out. Because some people really think that the only thing that works is ivermectin, which I hate using because it just most of it passes out through the poop. And then any insects that are trying to help you break down your manure just get demolished by the ivermectin in the poop. So I'm really motivated by pollinators, wildlife, and soil health to move away fully from chemical dewormers. And they're just like starting to not work anymore, especially in ruminants and now in pigs too. So it also might just be that we need to really focus on breeding more parasite resistant. There's a huge amount of focus on that in the ruminant side of things, not as much on the omnivore side of things, because when pigs get parasites, oftentimes it's not that they die like a goat or a sheep, it's just that their average daily gains go down, and with feed being as expensive as it is, you're just feeding the worms and not feeding the pig. So yeah, that's another thing. If anyone wants to someday get into farrowing and really focus on that, that'd be huge. Other questions? Yeah. One last question, he says, but I'm also happy to stay here and talk about pigs for the whole day. Yes.
On your rations, what protein are you giving? Are you switching throughout the year at all? And is it a complete feed, or are you counting some nutrients coming from the pasture?
Great question about feed. Percentage protein depends on the size of the pig. Sometimes, if the pigs are a little smaller, we'll start them out on an 18% complete ration. But largely for most of their time on our farm, we do a 16% protein. My mentor does 16% on his farm for everybody, which I think is really interesting. He raises red wattles at Pork and Plants Farm in Altura. The second question was, is it a complete feed? My feed mill owner, she puts, I think, slightly higher of certain minerals in because we're on pasture, like selenium, I believe. So she tailors it a little bit, but mostly I'm assuming they eat the ration and then get a lot of additional fun bonus nutrients from the pasture. And I think that's all we have time for. Email me. If you have questions, take care. Thank you so much for coming.